Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Eric Erickson, and it's the third hour. Welcome. The phone number, if you want to call in, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Real quick, it's a programming note at the bottom of this hour of the program. That is about 35 after the hour. Sean Clifford is going to join me. I realize none of you know who Sean Clifford is. I get asked constantly about what do we do on the internet to protect our kids, to make sure our kids aren't doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, going down the rabbit holes of the internet where they can get sucked down in their with their mind, pornography and the like. What do we do? And over the years, I've endorsed, not as ads, but just we use them in our house, a number of products. But some of those products are not as good as they used to be. And I'm always on the lookout for better stuff. And so Sean Clifford is the founder of a company called Canopy. And Canopy uses, human monitoring and also machine algorithms to not just protect your kids, but, you know, occasionally your kids can go to a website that it seems to be family friendly, but you stumble upon inappropriate pictures or some such. And this company, Canopy, has developed technology that actually protects you even there using algorithms and stuff so that your kids aren't stumbling across accidentally nudity on an otherwise fine website and the like. And so I want to talk to him about the product because I hear from people all the time now that their kids stumbled down rabbit holes on the internet and they've gone to dark places. And what do we do now to protect our kids? And so some of the apps that I've recommended in the past, we still use like the Circle device in our house, but you know, the Circle markets with Disney as well. And I am increasingly mindful of the fact that some of these companies don't have my family's values. And so they're allowing kids access to stuff that other companies might not, and Canopy is a company that tends to share yours and my values, and therefore I wanted to talk to Sean about his product and what he does. They're not an advertiser. It's not an ad. I just actually really want to talk to him about it, and I'm sure you guys are going to want to hear it as well. Before we get there, there's a story. I put it off the other day. Well, actually, before you get there, there actually is some breaking news I should bring to you. The Biden administration is preparing to sanction individual members of the Cuban regime, and a government special forces unit known as the Bonas Negras for human rights abuses, according to a source familiar with the plans. This move is expected as soon as today and will call out violators of human rights abuses in the country in a very public way. The Black Berets, identified locally by the Buenos Negras, are formerly known as the National Special Brigade of the Ministry of the Interior. They're an elite Cuban special forces unit that the government has deployed to crack down on protesters following widespread anti-government demonstrations on the communist island. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said Wednesday, the Treasury Department is exploring sanctions on Cuban officials responsible for violence, oppression, human rights abuses against those peaceful protesters. So that is happening right now. Okay. I need to talk to you about a story. And it is I'm trying to find it. It's one of those things where I had it bookmarked and then suddenly it disappeared. Where you, no, they did not. I'm not surprised if they didn't, if they disappeared it, but they didn't. I actually, accidentally deleted it. And okay, here we go. This is the story. So, and by the way, Phil Mattingly, Jeff Cellini, and Kevin Liptek, are contributed to the story at CNN. A word, if you will, Phil Mattingly at CNN is one of the best reporters in Washington, D.C. Even if he is an Ohio fan, Phil Mattingly is a brilliant reporter. You should pay attention to Phil Mattingly when Phil Mattingly reports, because Phil Mattingly is, a great guy who does his best to get the story right without a partisan frame. This is why I take this story seriously, because Phil Mattingly contributed to the story at CNN. Let me read you the beginning of this story. Joe Biden's presidency is only 6 months old, but the mood inside the White House can often feel like a race against time. The clock is running. We all know that, a senior advisor to Biden said, speaking on conditions of anonymity. The president certainly knows that. Biden has 3.5 years remaining in his term, but his senior advisors speak frequently about the sense of urgency facing his presidency, with the next year almost certain to be dominated by midterm elections that could take away the Democratic majorities in Congress he needs to pass his agenda. In West Wing meetings lately, White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain has impressed upon aides the critical importance of the next few weeks. Recognizing the stakes, Biden and his team are sharpening their strategy to confront an epic set of challenges that some of their allies fear could impart lasting political damage. COVID cases are spiking, inflation is up, border crossings are rising, the Taliban are taking over Afghanistan, and a much-touted bipartisan infrastructure agreement is teetering on the brink. If Biden ever had a honeymoon period after inheriting a raging global pandemic, there's a good argument he has not. It is clear at the six-month point of his presidency, the honeymoon is over. At the White House and on the road, the president has begun adopting a more aggressive stance against Republicans and other critics, including on voting rights and the Afghan withdrawal. I can end there. But it is worth noting, they point out, there are continue to be internal disagreements within the White House on what to do. Typically, and they're right, the president has a 4-year term. But the midterm elections, most analysts think, unless the Republicans just completely screw it up, which is always likely, that even without redistricting, Republicans will pick up the House. They don't need redistricting to pick up the House. But redistricting will help them, and the Republicans will control redistricting in a majority of the states. In states like North Carolina, where they got a Republican legislature but a Democratic governor, the governor is prohibited from vetoing redistricting. In Texas, if the Democrats bolt like they're doing right now over the election law, the state requires that the governor, the lieutenant governor, the secretary of state, and several other statewide elected officials, the attorney general included, draw the lines. They're all Republicans. In Florida, Republicans control the legislature and the governor's mansion. The Democrats will be hurt there. In Georgia, Democrats had hoped they could take back at least one house in the Georgia legislature. They did not. Republicans will draw all the lines there. While Democrats will draw all the lines in places like New York and Illinois and Maryland, those states are in decline, so it doesn't do them as much good. Republicans, more likely than not, will pick back up the House. And while the Republicans are not, the odds are actually not in Republicans' favor picking back the Senate, they could. There's new polling out of New Hampshire, for example, that has the Republican there, what's his name, Sununu, not John, his son, ahead of the incumbent Democrat for the U.S. Senate. Joe Biden's days of getting serious things done in Washington are almost gone. It is July 22nd. the Democrats in the Senate still can't get their infrastructure together. In fact, this morning, Nancy Pelosi all but sabotaged the Republicans or the Democrats' ability to get infrastructure done. It is not good for the Democrats that Nancy Pelosi did what she did this morning. Here is Nancy Pelosi at a press conference 3 hours ago talking about the Senate and the House and infrastructure.
We are working very hard to get the job done for the American people, to lower health care costs, lower pollution, raise, as I said to when we ran, we said lower health care costs, bigger paychecks, cleaner government, and that's what we are about. The cleaner government comes with the HR1 S1. Combine them, the Senate resolution, the House resolution, to get this done. So, in any event, as I mentioned, we are here to get the job done. We cannot respond to some of the legislation until the Senate acts. As I said, we will not take up the infrastructure bill until the Senate passes the reconciliation bill.
That's the key part here. We will not take up the infrastructure bill until the Senate passes the reconciliation bill. Now, what's this about? Remember, there's a bipartisan infrastructure bill. It's a bipartisan infrastructure bill. It was negotiated by Joe Biden and Republicans in the Senate. And Joe Biden came out and said, look, if y'all don't pass a reconciliation bill, which will do all the things the Democrats want to do that the Republicans wouldn't agree to, we're not going to do the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And Republicans balked at that and said, hell no. You said this was our bipartisan deal. You didn't make a contingent on passing what we were opposed to. So Biden came back out and said, yeah, you know, you're right. Let's clarify this. Go on, pass the bipartisan bill, and let's see if we can get the reconciliation bill passed. See, the Democrats don't have enough votes in the Senate to get their reconciliation bill passed at the amount they want. Joe Manchin has said no. They got to have Joe Manchin's vote, and they're not getting any of the Republican votes for it. And now along comes Nancy Pelosi and says, well, look, if you don't pass that reconciliation bill, we're not going to pass the other one. And now today there's a headline in the Politico that Democrats in the House are thinking of scrapping the bipartisan infrastructure bill. You've got progressives in the House of Representatives who are opposed to the bipartisan infrastructure talk. Progressives want $4.1 trillion. And the progressives are the ones saying, we're not going to pass your bipartisan infrastructure bill unless you also pass this. Now, here's Axios on this. 20 members of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee in the House are signaling they're going to vote against the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure package. That kills it. They can only lose three. Joe Biden has got to get something done, and he can't get the Democrats to do it. They're trying to blame Republicans and say it's all Republican obstruction, but the Democrats themselves can't get anything done. The president can't get a Green New Deal done. He can't get any sort of health care reform done. He can't get any immigration plan done. He can't get anything done with his own side 6 months in, and his own chief of staff is telling the White House staff that they've only got a few more weeks to be able to get anything done because then everybody's going to pivot to the midterms, and they're not going to get anything done next year because Republicans will politicize it all. This is starting to look like the Carter administration. They've given up on any level of bipartisanship. They can't get it done. Inflation is on the rise, which is going to cause interest rates to rise, which is going to spark a recession, which is going to hurt the Democrats and possibly Biden's own reelection or Kamala Harris's reelection. And don't look now, new polling has Kamala Harris at 17 points underwater. Even a lot of Democrats don't like Kamala Harris. So you've got a president of the United States whose White House is signaling their ability to get anything done is almost out of time, and their vice president is dragging them down in popularity. this isn't good for Joe Biden. This isn't good for the Democrats. And frankly, to be quite honest with you, some of this stuff isn't good for the country in that the Biden administration is having to rally progressives at the expense of the rest of the country to try to ram stuff through and see if they can get rid of the filibuster. That'll be deeply destructive to the country. But they don't care, because one of the things the Biden administration has to be mindful of is there's a civil war brewing on the Democratic side. Everybody loves to talk about the dynamics on the Republican side and the focus of divisions and do they like Trump? Or are they going to throw Trump overboard? What are they going to do with Trump? But the actual reality is that the Democrats are starting to crack up, and Biden's doing everything he can to hold on, hold the reins, keep him from cracking up. But increasingly, as they have to rely on the progressives to get anything through, they're alienating the moderates. As Biden tries to go moderate, he alienates the progressives. And as they continue their critical race theory nonsense and their culture war on America, they're alienating Americans. It's not good for the country. It's really bad for the Democrats. And ultimately, because it's causing a Democratic crackup, that will be good for the country, because the country will reject progressives. Democrats themselves are rejecting progressives around the country. Oh, there's news on that front when we come back. This is a truly remarkable story. And I gotta read this to you. This is from the New York Times. I don't want to read you the full story, but I can just, let me read you the opening of this story. He was sleep deprived and nearly out of ammunition, alone in the wilderness of Alaska. Well, not really alone. For several nights in a row, the man had fended off the tenacious advances of a grizzly bear that had attacked him a few days earlier at a mining camp some 40 miles outside Nome. There was no way to phone for help, but then help found him. En route to a mission on Friday, the crew of a Coast Guard helicopter saw the man waving both hands in the air, a widely recognized distress signal, the helicopter's pilot said. On the tin roof of a shack, SOS and help me had been scrawled. The shack's door had been ripped off. The crew took the man to Nome to be treated for bruises to his torso and a leg injury that was not life-threatening, according to the Coast Guard. So ended a week-long ordeal that could pass for a sequel to The Revenant, in which Leonardo DiCaprio was mauled by a computer-generated grizzly bear. At some point, a bear had dragged him down to the river, Lieutenant Commander Jared Carbajal, one of the pilots of the Coast Guard helicopter, said. He had a pistol. He said the bear kept coming back every night, and he hadn't slept in a few days. The Coast Guard did not identify the man, who rescuers said was in his late 50s or early 60s, who had been staying in the shack since July 12th on the small mining claim. It was not clear how the man had reached the remote camp, which had no cell service and is in a river drainage area. Wow. There's you a story that could be made into a movie, and this is a woman, last week was pulled out of a tent by a grizzly bear and killed. My goodness, nature is something. And, you know, I follow a guy on Instagram. He's a photographer for Sony. I've got a Sony A7 R2. I've gotten into photography. I follow this guy. He takes brilliant outdoor photography. He was on a trail yesterday, and a grizzly bear got on the trail and started. You know, it was a smaller bear, thankfully. But smaller grizzly bear, yes, but started following people, and all the people were a little bit perturbed. It appeared, though, thankfully, that the grizzly was just checking them out. But my goodness gracious, these stories, part of this is we continue to invade wildlife habitat where people don't frequently go. And we have so much more expansive media these days. We're covering this stuff. But this story is just amazing. It's in the New York Times today, and I do got to give them credit for actually a really intriguing story. When we come back, Sean Clifford's going to join me from Canopy, talk about your children getting online and where they go and how to protect them. Yes, you can call in. Glad to have you with me. It is Eric Erickson here. It's 35 after the hour. Wherever you are nationwide, at least that should be the time of day, regardless of what time of day it is. 35 after the hour. You can call in 877-973-7425, except you can't right now. One of the topics that I encounter all the time, particularly, you know, been in seminary and talking about culture issues and technology issues a lot, not just politics on the show, and having a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old who are surfing the internet while they're outside my presence. What do you do to protect your kids from either doing things they shouldn't do, but also stumbling upon other stuff? There are a lot of solutions. I myself have used different devices and apps, and, you know, we're in the Apple cult in our house. When I go to New York, I walk 7 times around the Apple cube praying to Steve Jobs. But it's not all flawless, and increasingly there are better and better programs out there, and I have stumbled upon one a while back. And when I was out at the National Religious Broadcasters Association, they have to be out there. And so I wanted to talk about Canopy with its founder, Sean Clifford, who joins me by phone. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. So if you would, just give people an overview of what Canopy is. And by the way, folks, they're not an advertiser. This is, I actually really did want to talk to Sean about this because I know you guys ask me constantly. This is the number one thing people ask me that's non-political is what to do on this. So Sean, if you would, tell people about Canopy.
Absolutely. Canopy is a tech company. We've launched a next generation internet filter that effectively delivers families a porn-free internet experience. So that's us in a nutshell. We also can help prevent sexting, and our ultimate goal is to help families flourish online.
Now, okay, just let's take a step back for a minute on this, because this really is, for so many people, a brave new world. You and I did not grow up in an age of the immediate ability to connect around the world with other people on a device we keep in our pocket. And so no one raising kids right now has ever experienced anything like this, where your 8-year-old can get on a tablet and stumble upon something they shouldn't stumble upon. And yet here we are in this world. And I didn't mean to pause the thought there, but it's just, I mean, what do you do? And do you have kids, and how do you relate with your family?
Well, I think you're right. We're the first generation that's dealing with this. And I think that's one of the challenges, is that the old playbooks don't apply. They don't apply in that the challenge is novel, right? I didn't have a cell phone until I was in college. So my parents didn't have to wrestle with that. But then secondly, the nature of what they can access online is so different from some of the things that we had access to when we were younger. So I think that's the first part. I'm a father of 4 kids. They range from 9 to 2 years old. And so, you know, this is a challenge that I'm struggling with imperfectly day in and day out, and really trying to find ways, because I think technology is amazing. I want them to partake in that. I think it's inevitable. I don't think we're going to put the cat back in the bag. And so we have to figure out how to live well with it. And right now it's hard. Even if you want to do that, we don't always have the tools or the recourse to do it. And so that's kind of what prompted Canopy. That's what we're trying to figure out. Again, all with the goal of giving families the tools they need to navigate it a little bit more successfully.
Now, I've got in my house, I've got a Circle device. It limits, like, for example, if you come to my house, you can't use Snapchat and stuff like that on our Wi-Fi. But that bypasses, if you've got cell service, you can. And then I've got, we're in the Apple cult, and I've got the Apple monitoring stuff on my kids' phones and the like, although I suspect there are ways around some of that. How do you segment and set Canopy apart from stuff like that?
It's a great question. There's a lot of tools out there, and it really depends on what that core need is that you want to address. I think what Canopy does better than anyone else out there is that we're able to prevent exposure to pornography, and we're also able to deter sexting. On those two dimensions, I think we're the best tool out there. And so we're really excited about that, and we think we offer something. So I'll share a little bit about why we're different. Our tool is cutting edge because we're relying on 2 big tech advances that came out of Israel. The first is our team over there figured out how to build artificial intelligence that could identify nudity and pornography with 99.7% accuracy. The second is they figured out how to scan the internet in real time as you browse in just a matter of milliseconds. So when you put those 2 things together, we are able to scan websites as you're navigating them, see if any of the content is problematic, and then either block it or just pull out the bad stuff before the images and videos populate on a page. So the net effect of this is if there's a brand new porn site, never been scanned before, no one's ever tagged it, we'll still be able to block it. And then secondly, so much of the internet today, regrettably, is good mixed with bad. And if you go to a website like Twitter or a website like Reddit, and there's some good in there and there's also some pornographic content, we can strip out just the bad stuff without blocking the whole thing. So you can still access some of the content that you're okay with your kids interfacing with, knowing that they won't be tripping into some of the hypersexualized content that regrettably exists in more and more places.
Yeah, more and more places. And it's just, I was actually talking with a friend of mine the other day who's a dad who said he had to have that talk with his third grader because while his third grader lives a rather sheltered life, the third grader's friends who go to a different school are not living in as sheltered a life and have already stumbled in third grade, which just blows my mind that could be happening. And yet it's increasingly pervasive. And I guess the thing that really caught my eye with Canopy is the idea that my kids could go to a website that is otherwise fine, like, for example, Wikipedia, where there's tons of useful content there for better or worse, but then suddenly you stumble across something on Wikipedia that you really don't want your kids seeing. So how do you block that without blocking their access to the website overall?
Yeah, so that's been the real challenge, right? The traditional tools we kind of think of as a butcher's cleaver. It's kind of an all or nothing approach, and that's very difficult to maintain in the modern world. And so we think of our tool as a scalpel, where we have a little bit of precision extraction. We can take out just the bad stuff, but still serve up the rest. So we think it's a novel approach. And just to your point about the age, you know, the thing that scares me, the majority of American kids today will be exposed to hardcore pornography before they enter middle school, which is terrifying. And the other thing to keep in mind is the majority of those, over 60% of that first exposure, is accidental. And so I think one thing I encounter a lot is, you know, I'm raising good kids. I trust my kids. And at some point when pornography was hard to access, that may have been sufficient. Today, you can have great kids, and it used to be that it was hard to find it. Now it's hard to avoid it. And so, you know, unless we're proactive, unless we're taking steps, it's regrettably something that your kid will be exposed to. And so, you know, our hope is, number one, give people the tools to kind of avert that. But number two, raise awareness and really encourage parents. You need to be engaged. This matters. You matter. You know, give your kid a fighting chance, right? And it's the external filter, but it's also that internal one that's so very important.
Yeah, very much so. So where do you see the technology evolving now? It is fascinating to me that you're able to use algorithms and machine learning and the like to be able to go into a web page that is otherwise fine and block out certain things. How do you see the evolution of the technology going?
Well, we've got evolution in a couple different respects. The first is other domains. And there's two things I'm really excited about that are rolling out right now, again, developed by our innovation team in Israel. The first is we've got a platform or a new service that can identify child sexual abuse material, child pornography, and flag it. And so big tech platforms could adapt this to instantly remove images and videos that contain that kind of problematic content. So we think that's something that can really help clean up the internet overall. We've also got something for law enforcement that enables them to identify CSAM content so that individual agents don't have to sit there and manually go through some of the most dark content out there in order to prosecute. So that's kind of the lateral extension. Down the road, look, we think that technology is not going away. And if it's compelling now, it's only going to be more compelling in the years ahead. And we have to continue to figure out how to live well with it. I think our initial focus is on protecting children from exposure to pornography. We'll get better and better on that. I think we're the best tool out there for it. We're not perfect, but we're getting better every day. But I also think there are other questions about, can we live well with technology? Is it actually serving our intentions or just harvesting our attention? And on that front, people are looking for answers. They want help to make the most of it and live well with it and live wisely with it. And I think on that front, technology really, you know, we're just now recognizing all the problems with it, can help us play a constructive role there.
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I sometimes wonder, am I using technology or is technology using me, between either serving me up as a commodity to be sold to advertisers or the like. And I mean, I go back and forth on that issue. It's certainly, I grew up in the Middle East, was raised in Dubai and had a computer in my classroom starting in first grade, an Apple IIe. And I realize I'm the anomaly for particularly for someone in my age group in my 40s. And I love it. I love technology. But I also realize that there are some days where I feel like it sure does seem to be using me more than I'm using it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, even for adults like ourselves, but especially for kids, right? It's us against a team of neuroscientists and psychologists that have figured out through thousands of tests how to make it as compelling as possible, which is why we all love our devices. They really were designed and engineered to be as alluring as possible and to make you want to stay there. And so that's what makes us like it, but it's also what sometimes leads us astray from what we actually want to do with it. So I think more and more people are recognizing that. More and more people, even though they love their devices, don't love how they make them feel. And that's really what gives me hope that we will find a better way. We'll create the tools. We'll create the boundaries. We will figure this out.
I hope so. All right, Sean, if people want to learn about Canopy, where should they go?
Well, thank you so much. They can visit our website, canopy.us/safer. And there they can find out more about the tools, how we work, and ultimately our bigger vision for how families can flourish online.
Listen, I've enjoyed the conversation, and I learned right before air that we got a mutual friend in Mike. We can both text him and send him harassing text messages. He deserves it.
He does.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Sean, so canopy.us is the website, canopy.us. And again, this isn't promotional material. I didn't get paid to do this, and I know a lot of times people are cynical and they think that, or I'm getting some benefit for it. I am fascinated with the technology. And I really do think that anything I can do to make the internet experience safer for you and your kids, particularly for your kids, when it is so much more likely that they stumble upon stuff these days, that I wanted to highlight them. Canopy.us is the website. If you're interested in something like that, because I get this question emailed to me regularly now from parents, knowing I've got a preteen and a teen on what to do. And it's becoming an increasing problem as kids get on the internet. They get the stuff in their mind and it's very hard to get it out once it's in there. So you can go check them out. I also want you very explicitly to go check out our newest advertiser, because this is a company I believe in their cause. If you go use any of your major cell phone carriers out there, I guarantee you that cell phone carrier is not donating to pro-life causes. Or if they're donating to military causes, they're very selective in the ones they give money to, because they don't want to be seen as partisan or conservative. But Patriot Mobile is different. Patriot Mobile is a national cell phone carrier, and they support the companies and organizations that you support because they are explicitly Christian, explicitly conservative in their outlook and in their operations. They donate a portion of every dollar that they bring in to organizations that fight for the causes you care about, from pro-life causes to first responder causes to veterans causes. And they use the same towers that the other carriers use. They've got nationwide coverage. They wouldn't be an advertiser here if you couldn't take advantage of them. I want you to check them out. And right now you can get 50% off your first 2 months or $100 off any phone in stock with a 1 year commitment. And they have free premier activation for you. Now, switching's easy. This is the great part. Switching is easy. You can even port your phone number over. You go to patriotmobile.com/Eric, patriotmobile.com/Eric, E-R-I-C-K. Or you call their customer service team. It's 972-PATRIOT is the number, 972-PATRIOT. Real easy to go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. They really are a great company. They've got great access nationwide. You don't have to worry about the dead spots and the like. They're just solid. So go to patriotmobile.com/Eric. Get $50 or 50% off your first 2 months or $100 off any phone in stock with a 1 year commitment. And also keep in mind that they can fit your budget. They give great discounts to veterans and to first responders and to multi-line users. If you got a big family, Patriot Mobile can probably save you some money. Well, this just hit the wire at CNN. Atlanta Public Schools, one of the nation's first districts to begin its school year next month, will require masks for all students and teachers in school and on buses. The announcement comes despite Governor Brian Kemp's rolling back such measures in an executive order. The universal mask wearing protocol will start as the new school year begins on August 5th. Factors that the district considered include the rise of the Delta Airlines variant and the children younger than 12 who are not yet eligible for COVID-19 vaccines. Why? This is a trend nationwide. More and more school districts, and you know the American Academy of Pediatrics coming out and saying the same thing. I don't think it's wise. I don't think it's wise to do that. When you tell people that you got to get the vaccine and then you got to still wear your mask, that's a problem. But then when you tell kids they've got to wear masks at school, I think that's a problem. Now, yes, we went through last year wearing masks at school, but we know that kids, if they get COVID, are still more likely than not going to be fine, even with the Delta variant. The number of children who have died of COVID since it spread across the Western world is less than 1,000. And we're talking millions and millions of people infected. And only a few hundred kids, even in this country, the number is incredibly small, the number of kids who have died of COVID. And yet you're going to tell them they've got to wear masks in school. I don't think that's a good thing. I really don't. And look, I'm pro-mask. I've been an advocate of masks, and I know many of you are at odds with me on that because you don't think that the masks work. And I think it depends on how you talk about them, how you deal with it. An infected person wearing a mask actually can keep other people from getting the vaccine, particularly if those other people are also wearing masks. It does you no good if you're uninfected and the infected person is not wearing a mask, but you are. But I just don't see why we need our kids to be doing this. And I suspect, honest to goodness, I suspect we are rapidly going to get to the point where the education establishment in this country starts clamoring for kids to go back remote. What's that going to do to the economy? What's that going to do to parents? What's that going to do? At some point, you got to move on. And yes, the Delta variant is spreading rapidly around the country, overwhelmingly to unvaccinated people. And yes, our children are unvaccinated, but they are the least likely among all of us to be affected by the virus, even if they get it. And it does not help that the President of the United States of America, when asked about this very issue, can't articulate an answer. Friends, this is literally how the President of the United States of America responded to the question, will children under 12 be able to get vaccinated?
That's underway, just like the other question is illogical. And I've heard you speak about it because you always, I'm not being solicitous, but you're always straight up about what you're doing. Yeah. And the question is whether or not we should be in a position where you are, why can't the experts say, we know that this virus is in fact, it's going to be, we know why all the drugs approved are not temporarily approved, but permanently approved. Yeah. That's underway too. I expect that to occur quickly.
Well, does anybody have any idea what the man just said? That's the President of the United States on this issue. It doesn't help when the President of the United States has to be unplugged, blown out and then rebooted. To try to get it to work. It doesn't work that way. We need to get something other than a Tandy 1000 for president.